Welcome to Business Lives by Vox Markets, the podcast that brings you closer to the people who shape the world of business. We give you an insight into the lives of the individuals who stand out from the crowd. For updates on the latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel.
On the podcast today, we have iconic British businessman Robert Hiscox. For 43 years, Robert was the chairman of the pioneering insurance company Hiscox Insurance. Taking control of the business in the early 20s, with just 10 employees, he grew the business into the world-renowned and FTSE 100 company. Often outspoken and always opinionated, Robert was fundamental in helping save Lloyd's of London from the brink of collapse in the early 90s, and has also played an integral role in shaping the London insurance market as it stands today.
The good life. As my father always told me, you've got Rolls Royce ideas on a push bike income. And I was sort of asking for this, that, and the other. So I had to make it myself. And I think that's one of the greatest assets a man can have is a shortage of money.
Robert Hiscox, you know, you're renowned for taking a company from 10 people to a multi-billion pound company. Obviously, that didn't happen overnight. But how did you achieve that?
Well, I think just trying to do what I said I'd do when I said I'd do it. There aren't enough people in life who actually are basically responding in service and just doing things with common sense and doing what other people did, but doing it better. But the primary thing, of course, was choosing good people. I chose a good team to be around me, and I do think that the ability to choose good people is fundamental if you're going to build any business at all. We can all do so much ourselves, and then, but we need good people around us to build it beyond the small.
So I suppose the workforce planning for you was a key aspect of delivering that.
Yes, I must say, when I started when I was 27, we never had a plan at all except just as I said, do business better than other people. And I don't think people should concentrate on growth when they're young. Just concentrate on doing a good job. When you grow, surprisingly, you grow to an extent that you will be surprised when you look back. I had a very good mentor when I was young, and he said, don't think about growth. Just do a good job, and you will be staggered at what happens. But I must say, when we were young, they were very amateur days. We never had such a thing as a business plan. We just sat down and underwrote insurance and tried to write more and more good business and avoid the bad business.
And was the culture within the company? I mean, these days, culture is a big thing, you know, especially amongst the sort of the American big, huge companies. Was culture a key thing for you, do you believe?
I did. I mean, I built the business to start with and didn't think about its values or something because they were very much just what I did day to day. But later, when we got to be bigger, somebody said, you've got to encapsulate these values into words. And so we did. And I think the prime one was courage. You know, you've got to make decisions. And Lloyd's underwriters, which we were to start with before, you know, take decisions very quickly and decisively. So we were used to making decisions and making mistakes. You're bound to make some mistakes. But be decisive. It's always better to make a bad decision fast than a slow decision very slowly. And the culture of challenging convention was our overriding one. I remember they wrote that down because I've always been a bit of a contrarian, and I spoke out against some of the practices at Lloyd's regularly and consistently. And I think the staff love it when you put your head above the parapet and speak up. And I think it's people. The one thing I wanted to do when I got to be a bigger company was to be thought of as human. That when you did business with Hiscox, you did business with a human. Our call center people did not have a script. You spoke to somebody who was intelligent enough to answer your question and was enabled to make a decision. And of course, it requires guts to let people make decisions, and it requires guts to make decisions. So I think I get back to courage, and a fundamental is always doing what you said you'd do when you said you'd do it. But I think humanity came into it. The other thing I really ground into the company, I think, was, I've said it there, that when you're dealing with us, you're dealing with a human who could make a decision and talk to you about your problem. In all, treating people with respect and humanity, the staff and the customers, because efficiency can be very brutal. You know, the bank's got to be frankly efficient by cutting hours. You can never go and talk to a bank manager. It's all done through a process. I think process is the worst word in the English language now. Whenever you deal with some large company, they've always got a process to go through, and you're just being processed. Well, I don't like being processed. I like being dealt with by a human being.
Indeed, yes. You touched on earlier that you had a very good mentor. I mean, would you mind sharing some of the lessons that he passed on to you?
Well, I mean, I can so well remember him saying, "You've got to be a good picker," because he was American, and you know, there's no point. You won't get anywhere in life unless you're a good picker of people. And I was going to, if I made my surplus millions, which I haven't, I was going to start a business school, which was just 1 year of training people to choose good people. But of course, you've got to have the self-confidence to choose people who are better than you, maybe just at the task they do. But I mean, it's very, you know, my 50 years in business, I was always amazed that people chose inferior staff. I thought they were inferior because they quite, you know, they were cock sparrows and they liked to be surrounded by people who do what they said. I could always spot a cock sparrow a mile away. He wanted to be in total charge, and they tended to leave a business when they left, which didn't do well. I've always said the final judgment of a businessman is what happens to the business after he leaves, because he should have built in succession and good people, and he should have ended up being surplus to requirements, as I was.
So what would you say then, if you're looking to hire a new manager, for example, what were the key talents that you would be looking for?
Well, I think we're born with an incredible instinct to judge people. I think children, I've had five children, and they've all said, "Don't like him, Daddy," or "I like him, Daddy." And they're nearly always right, because I think we're born with a very good instinct for other people. We then, if we're men, we generally get very influenced by whether they're tall or got hair or something. Women are better judges of character. But I think we lose it. And then, of course, now HR completely has lost it, because they want you to fill in forms and do psychometric tests. And they've lost that instinct of just choosing. Now, I'm very lucky. If you're building a small business, up to about 100 people, I chose everybody myself, even the doorman. I mean, I wasn't, you know, they were working for the family, as it were. Not so, it wasn't a family business, but they were working for the Hiscox business, and they were like part of the family, and I wanted to choose them. And I think you've got to use your instinct tremendously. It's not easy, because we have, you know, we all judge books by the cover. We all look at somebody and think, they're not, you know, that they can impress us, because when you're interviewing somebody, they're very much on ego instead of persona or whatever it is. They're trying to show you their best side. My other secret weapon was I used handwriting analysis, because I found over the years it was an incredible guide to what somebody was like. I didn't tell me whether I should employ them or not, because they could be quite difficult people, but very good at what I wanted them for. And so it just gave me an instinct. It gave me an insight into some of their characteristics. Now, we've all got our insecurities and our impurities, but they sometimes are very useful, because they give us a chip. One of the things I've always asked when I'm interviewing people and try to find out if they are driven, and you know, you can... I want people who are actually driven to succeed and ambitious and energetic, is what has given them that drive. Because there's generally some insecurity somewhere that eggs people on to excel at what they do. And I used to call it searching for the chip. In my case, it was lack of money, because I had a very good education, but... there was no family money, and I had mixed with a lot of people. I wanted the good life. As my father always told me, you've got Rolls-Royce ideas and a push-bike income. And I was sort of asking for this, that, and the other. So I had to make it myself. And I think that's one of the greatest assets a man can have, is a shortage of money.
Indeed, indeed. So I wanted to talk to you as well about, obviously, during the 90s, there was the whole Lloyd debacle, and that must have been quite a low point in your career. And I would imagine that a lot of people would have sort of turned around and said, oh, gosh, you know, I've had enough of this and given up. What drove you on at that point? I mean, because that stage, it wasn't necessarily the money, was it?
God, it was necessity. It was very much the money. I had unlimited liability for what we'd been trading in. My wife had unlimited liability. My mother had unlimited liability. My sister, they were all small members of Lloyd's through us. So the Hiscox family would have been completely wiped out if Lloyd's had gone. And I sat in front of my house, and I still remember sitting, looking back, thinking, I have risked all this, because Lloyd's membership in those days was all unlimited down to your last collar stud. And I had criticized the management of Lloyd's annually in very great critic of management of Lloyd's. And it's one time I really wasn't pleased to have been right. But I went to the center and became deputy chairman of Lloyd's in the crisis out of sheer necessity to keep myself from bankruptcy. Because if Lloyd's had stopped trading and gone into runoff, which was quite a high percentage chance, the runoff would have been phenomenally expensive. When you stop getting premiums in the insurance business and you have to continue paying claims, you bleed to death very fast. And you've got to remember, we had unlimited liability. So it was a very tense. It was like the war. My father went through the war, and it was the most interesting time of his life, he said, but two-thirds of his friends were killed. I went through the Lloyd's debacle, which was incredibly interesting, to get a very big institution off the rocks and into, it has done incredibly well since. I can't pretend it was in any way fun. It was very grisly, because people were hurt and wounded and they'd lost money and they shouted at us. And if you go and try and help something in trouble, you will be shouted at. And I mean, to give you a flavor of the feeling in the market, we had an annual general meeting of Lloyd's with 3,000 people in some huge hall. And when David Rowland, the chairman, said, "Good morning, ladies and gentlemen," somebody shouted out, "Liar." I mean, and then you started, because they were wounded. And I understood that. If you've got unlimited liability and you're bleeding and the losses are coming in and you can't see an end, you know, it was hugely satisfactory to get it off the rocks and let it sail off in the sunset. But by God, during it was... It was grisly.
I would imagine coming out of there must have been a huge relief and probably a high point in your career, I suppose.
I used to imagine walking into Lloyd's when it was safe, and it was enormously satisfactory, because, you know, I was party to getting corporate capital, stopping that. I always wanted to get rid of unlimited membership. I thought unlimited membership... I mean, I used to say to my investors, the rule number one of the Harvard Business School is don't incur unlimited liability. I was talking through my head because I made it up. But I was, as a soft sell, I would say to them that. And then I would say, I would never be a member of Lloyd's if I didn't work here. And that, of course, if you do a really soft sell. And I was right, because I was involved and I did have unlimited liability myself. But I was eating my own cooking. So
going back to yourself then and your own success, would you say that you have certain personal habits that you would have brought on that success?
Well, I persistence is omnipotent. I'm a completer finisher. I'm a Capricorn, therefore I'm an old goat that climbs steadily to the top. I've got a great time with Capricorns, because we always climb, as I said, steadily to the top. I think I've got common sense. I've bags of energy. Certain business intuition, I suppose, but it's all about a common sense at the end. Business to a good business person seems so shatteringly simple. You get in more than you pay out. You run it, you know, as with as good people as you can get, and don't waste money. But the insurance business is very tricky business, because you're taking in premiums. It's the only thing where you are selling something, insurance, and you don't know the cost of it. I used to say, if you put bananas on the table and said, you go sell those, and you've only got a rough idea what they cost this year. I mean, we don't, you know, claims come in after the event. So It's a very satisfying job, underwriting insurance, because you are using your judgment, you're anticipating, you're thinking, you know, what's going to happen to this business? Are they honest? Are they, you know, and in the end, when the figures come in, you can see whether you were right or wrong. And one thing I say to the young today who've got computers adding everything up is we had no computers adding things up except the premiums. We knew what our premiums were, but we did not know what our liabilities were at all. So you had to use such enormous instinct. I think I've got enough there. No, I must have overdone it there. Well, I see them now putting a CD or something into a computer and they've got heat maps and they know exactly how much they've got in Florida. I think we had to put a wet finger in the wind, which is, I mean, the trouble is with Lloyd's, so many syndicates had to stop trading because they didn't have the right business intuition. But they were exciting times.
I suppose that segues us nicely into my next question, and we'll wrap up a little bit now. But if a young entrepreneur came to you, what advice would you give him?
Well, as I said, do what you said you do when you said you'd do it. It's as simple as that, really. And be reliable. I've had to give motivational talks to schools occasionally, and I've always done the opposite. I did what Johnny Carson in America did. I said what not to do. You know, be unreliable, take drugs, don't listen to advice, but get a team of people around you. And well, I always say, do what you enjoy. Do not go and do something for the money. Don't go to where, like, all these lads going off to the city to try and make an investment banking fortune. Do something that you really enjoy, because if you really enjoy, you'll be good at it. And if you're good at it, you will prosper. And it shouldn't be all about the money, but if you're good at it and you're enjoying it, you'll have a very happy life. And success is too monetary. The life I've lived in the City of London, it's all measured by how much money you've made. Whereas success should be ending your life having had a varied experience and enjoyed yourself and having happy people around you, isn't it?
Well, Robert, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And we hope to catch up again soon, maybe.
Great. Thanks very much.
For updates on the latest episodes, please subscribe to our channel.